Hello, everybody. Welcome to Sacred Symbols Plus, your weekly Sacred Symbols supplement. I'm your host for today, Dustin, and joining me is Last Stand producer Ben Smith. What's going on, dude?
How's it going? Doing all right. Yeah. It sounded like you said supplement whenever you said supplement.
Supplement.
I know you didn't, but I feel like a supplement is something I want to explore.
Like a supple. Oh, we're going to provide something supple here for you. But no, I'm doing well today. I don't know if you asked me if I was doing well, but that was what my brain defaulted to after you said
No, I didn't give a shit how you were doing.
Well, I mean,
I've talked to you like all day. Like, what's the, you know?
Yeah. Well, I was fine. Now I'm not, but that's okay. This is a spoiler cast for the game Stray. This is a PlayStation and PC game published by Annapurna, and the developer is a new team called Blue 12 Studio. And Ben, I feel like there was a appropriate amount of lead up to this game in a way that this game got some mainstream press from particular. I mean, Sony really pushed it.
Yeah.
To the point where, like, by the time it came out, when it was released, it was trending on Twitter, like the moment it went live, which is like kind of pretty crazy for a game like this. But overall, I guess we can just get right into it about this game. We'll do the beginning. We'll do some like spoiler free stuff just for anyone who wants to listen. We can put the timestamp in and then go from there. But Ben, let's start out with some high level thoughts on Stray. How did you find this game?
Well, first, you mentioned that there was like an appropriate lead up, and I kind of feel like this game kind of like came out and shocked everyone and then disappeared for a while. And then it didn't really show anything else until it was like, here's our release date. And I just like, I want more games to do that. If you're going to show me something 2 years in advance, then at least don't show me something every 3 months for 2 years. And then the second thing is just the Annapurna, like they constantly just publish the best shit. They're just, I mean, everything they get their hands on, they know what they're looking for. And then they apparently spend the money to get it looking even better. So all that aside, yeah, I thought the game was great. It was a nice little 6-ish hour experience with a cat in a cool world. And it's nothing groundbreaking. It certainly didn't, you know, change my viewpoint on cats or games for that matter. But it definitely was worth the ride. It was worth the time invested into it. And I liked it a lot. I'm sure we'll talk about more specifics as we go.
Yeah, I have to agree. I think I'm at the same point where it's like, there's a lot of impressive aspects of this game, like things that actually kind of were shocking to me, particularly the presentation, the graphics for a small team being able to create something like this. But I also more and more, and I think this has been said on Sacred Symbols many times, but I find myself drawn to these smaller, contained experiences. And so to be able to play this game and two or three sittings, or you could do it in one sitting, obviously, but something like that is becoming more and more appealing. And then the other thing, I guess, just to say also is that I love first person shooters. I love RPGs. I've played many of them. I will play many more of them in the future, and I know what to expect.
Yeah.
So every once in a while, a game comes along that is none of those things and just something that's totally original. I'm sure Stray is not the first game that you play as a cat, obviously, but it's the first one to, I feel like, really lean into. It's like, hey, you are a cat. You will behave and move around like a cat, and that will go into the different gameplay mechanics. But it takes that and then kind of blends it into the ever popular like cyberpunk type aesthetic. So sometimes just playing something new and fresh, even if it's not like a masterpiece experience, is fantastic for me.
Sure.
Do you feel that way about some things that's just like, at least it's new, right?
Yeah. Specifically with the part you said about it being linear too. Like for me, I've been playing a lot of games, and I like what's the word? Living games, not living games, but games that go on forever and don't stop. Live service games. Thank you.
Yeah.
But there's a, so because I play a lot of those, there's also a part of me that's like, I just want something that's going to narrow it down a little bit. And so this is the perfect thing for that. It's a little shorter than most of the games that I prefer to be a little linear. Like I'm playing through the original God of War right now, like the old God of War. And I'm like, this game isn't anything technically impressive right now because I didn't play it for, you know, 20 years. But the fact that I know that I just go from this point to that point is great. And so I want more games like that, like you said, and something digestible, something easy. I'm 100% on board with everything you just said there.
I think one thing that's worth bringing up also, though, we got some write-ins about this, but I didn't really want to make it a focal point of a spoiler cast. But I think one of the interesting things around the conversation of this game is, of course, that it is on PlayStation's Extra Plus service. And so obviously that's going to be a big boost to the amount of people that get exposure on something like this. And it's also a big boost for Sony's new service to have a game like this on it. And so to see like so many people chime in and see people on Twitter talking about it and seeing people's like cats react to the game and stuff like that has been extra cool. And man, you mentioned this earlier, Ben, but Annapurna, shout out to them just because they are killing it this year. I just saw today, I was on opencritic.com because I was looking at the Xenoblade Chronicles 3 reviews out today. So I was looking at the 2022 Hall of Fame. That's like their highest rated games. Fourth highest rated game this year is Neon White, which is a game you told me to play a little while back. And I was like, you know, I want to play it at some point. It's actually good because I just finished now that I finished this game, I'm kind of like in between some stuff. So I feel like now's the time. But a 90 on Neon White, that's just crazy. And now this game, I don't remember what. So Stray was an 84, which is also like really, really solid. But it's just funny in that. I guess Annapurna kind of was getting its footing when you and I, well, you were in the doing industry stuff for much longer than me, but when we were starting doing Handsome Phantom stuff, it kind of was like around the birth of Annapurna. Yeah. And to see them now, they're just like continually releasing bangers.
Right. And I wonder if there's something to that, not to get too off topic, but if there's something to that formula, like Neon White is the perfect pick up and play and put it down game. Like you can play it for 20 minutes and be done for, you know, however long. Stray, there's a little bit more that you need to keep going, but it's very much similar. Like there's nothing requiring you to stick around for forever. And I wonder if that's a philosophy that maybe they hold for some of their games, is that they need to be easily accessible and quick to play. And I don't know.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I'm just thinking back, like, I think one of the first games they published was What Remains of Edith Finch, which is one of my absolute favorite games of the past generation. So
that's another two or 4 hour game.
Right. Yeah. They've done a bunch of stuff like that. So enough about Annapurna, though. Let's go ahead and activate spoiler mode for anyone that just wanted to dip in and hear our initial thoughts, because I feel like in order to really get into it, we should just go ahead and let it full blast. And in addition, we also want to hear from you guys, which we did over at patreon.com/laststandmedia, where thousands of you support us. And if you're listening to this at launch, then you're a supporter. And that's how all of our spoiler casts work. You get it first on Patreon. It eventually goes free everywhere else. So if you're listening to this later, you're late. You could have been there when it launched. So support us over at patreon.com/laststandmedia. And thank you to those that are listening at launch. So let's start with Ian Savage, who said, "Hey, Sacred Crew, just wanted to say I was absolutely surprised by what this game turned out to be. I was especially enthralled by the game's aesthetics. What was your favorite aspect of the game?" So this is a pretty broad question to start us off. Like, what was your favorite aspect of the game? So, Ben, where are you going to go with all the different, you know, this wide ranging question?
I'm not a puzzle guy. In most games, I don't really like them. I'm perfectly fine if I try it for a couple minutes to look up the answer. But with this game, the way the kind of puzzles were, and they're not very complicated, but the way everything was presented felt much better because it was like puzzles in context of the world rather than just like stop and go in and like immerse yourself in this puzzle for like, remember when Spider-Man PS4 came out and it was like, we're going to take you out of the game for a minute so you can do this puzzle thing. Right, so I really, yeah. I did enjoy that. I think that was, you know, the problem solving was probably some of my favorite parts of the game. Shout outs to the to B12 as well. I really enjoyed some of the dialogue there as well.
I think for me, my favorite aspect of this game is kind of the tying of the fact of like aesthetics, density, and scope.
Yeah.
In that they have a very clear vision of what they wanted this game to look like. And I love this idea of it's like, okay, this city was built by humans and lived in by humans, but they are long gone.
Right.
In fact, I think by the, I'm not for sure about the exact timeline, but it seems like the robots have been living there longer than humans ever did.
Yeah.
And so you have kind of this weird mix of that. But I brought up the scope aspect in just that this game isn't huge. Like there's not like a million areas to go to. In fact, I think there's kind of like the three primary hubs that you go to, and then there's sections in between.
Right.
And one of the hubs, the middle one, is like you're not there very long at all. But I think that's actually to the game's strength in that those areas you go to, they're so dense with stuff to look at, stuff to see, people to talk to, and it makes it feel much more authentic than like if you had the entire city that you could walk around or something with a small team doing something like that. I just felt like more and more as I'm, I don't know, observing or analyzing these indie games or even bigger games is just seeing where games understand where to spend their budget. Yeah, and I feel like this one clearly had that very intentionally worked out.
Well, on that same idea, that first town you come to, is it Midtown or I don't remember. The first town you come to were like the slums.
Yeah. Midtown's the last one.
Majority of the game that you play, and like when you're going around finding the journals and everything, when you first go into there and you're like finding your way around, it seems a lot bigger than it is. Like I ended up playing through the game three times for reasons we'll maybe talk about later, maybe not, but in order to get the platinum. And I remember the first time I went in there, I was like, oh, I'm having a kind of a hard time finding everything. And then the third time I was like, oh, this is like really actually pretty tiny. It's just that you're a cat, so everything feels bigger than it is. So even in making the scope small, they still were able to give it a personality of being like a large space.
Right. Yeah, that's I remember feeling exact same way that the first time I was exploring, I was like, man, I feel lost. Mm-hmm. But I feel like once you get up on the rooftops and you can kind of look around and you're like, OK, this actually isn't super huge. And you can kind of like see the different landmarks. It's like much more manageable at that point. So let's move on to Kyle Howard, who writes in and says, hello, boys. Hope you're doing well. So in my 6 or so hour playthrough, I couldn't help but notice the cat I've been cat sitting, completely enthralled with the game. He'd jump on the counter and we'd have a meow off as he meows at the cat, also drawn to the meows coming sound coming from the controller. It was a blast. Just wondering if you guys had the same experience with your pets. Stay chill, guys. So, Ben, you don't have any pets at all. So no. I put this in for me mostly, unless you had anything you wanted to add.
Well, my 6-year-old thinks he's an animal sometimes. So he was meowing at, you know how that goes. You know how he is. He was meowing at the TV sometimes for sure. So
when I first started to play the game, I had Frisk, our tiny little dog. She was looking at the TV and kind of interested. But I've always wondered that some dogs are like really tuned in to a television or like a sound that is reproduced by a speaker.
Sure.
Frisk is not that way. And I don't know if that makes her smart or stupid.
Right.
Because in some ways I'm like, shouldn't this bother you? Like, shouldn't you think that there's a cat in the house? But I was like, well, maybe she knows the difference between an actual cat or a speaker. So I don't know.
We'll go with smart for her sake.
Yeah, she needs it. Yeah. Any area where she can get a little smart bonus points or whatever. But I have to say, I've absolutely been loving seeing the tweets, like the videos of people of their cats or their dogs like staring at the screen. I saw some people say they're like, I can't play this game with my dog in the room. Like it's too they go nuts. So that's just something that I found like super hilarious and cool. Moving on more about the cat himself, cat himself. Leighton Irvine writes in and says, in a game that captures the details and quirks of being a cat so well, why can you not lick your own asshole? Opportunity missed. That is all. And Ben, no asshole licking, no hairballs, no peeing on random things. I feel like this is a missed opportunity.
It's like they took all the good attributes of cats and kept all the bad ones out. And I'm just going to say, too, that you can lick your own asshole if you want. Just not in the game.
Right. Not in the game. You have to, do a little role play. Other methods. Yeah, something like that. But I will say, well, let me read this next one and then we can kind of talk about this more broadly. Paul S. says, hey, boys, is the press circle to meow the best command prompt since press F to pay respects? Thanks, Paul. And so I love this. I think that wait, is the next one, too, that I wrote in about also about cats? Oh, right, well, we'll read it in a second.
Sure.
Anyway. I love the. I referred to it when I was talking to Holly. I said the cat role play aspects because there are numerous different cat related things you can do in this game that are completely not necessary. The meow button, you can scratch walls or scratch on like carpets and stuff like that. And it's, I would say 90% of the time, not necessary. There are a few in there where you have to do it, but I really like that aspect of it. Oh, good.
The parts I liked the most, I think, of the cat roleplay aspects were when you were like knocking shit off of counters and like pushing over buckets. And even some of the times you actually had to do it to progress the story where you had to like knock stuff off of shelves in very cat like fashion. But I would say as far as the press F to pay respects, I mean, there's also press X to Jason.
Oh,
from Heavy Rain. So,
oh, I remember hearing about that, but I've actually never played Heavy Rain.
Oh, OK. But yeah, the circle to meow. I didn't look at the trophies before I started it, and I did not even realize that was a trophy. And I think I got it by the time I hit like the second chapter because I was just meowing constantly.
Oh, yeah. It's like 100 meows or something like that. Yeah, I got that pretty early on, too, because I found myself. I was like, yeah, it's the cat role play. I was like, because they will let you meow during cutscenes, not all of them, but most of them. So I found myself like, meow, like responding as the cat. So I wanted to add this one too from Logan, who says, hello, fellow cats. A few months ago, my girlfriend and I adopted an orange cat that we named Spaghetti. I mean, I don't know if that's spaghetti or just Spaghetti.
I like Spaghetti. So we were,
So we were extra excited to play as our little chaotic boy in Stray. I think we're all in agreement that Stray is already game of the year. Whoa. But in all seriousness, it might actually be mine. But I gotta ask, did any of you just embrace being a cat? I scratched every post and carpet. I knocked everything down I could, meowed my heart out, and slept every time I found a napping spot. I even got creative and had the zoomies in a robot's apartment, sprinting around the room, jumping on and off everything as fast as I could, meowing until my heart was content. I feel I truly understand my cats better now. And it seems like Logan took what we were just talking about to the top tier. Yeah. And Ben, I know since you did the platinum, you did this trophy. But one of my favorite parts of like the cat isms of this game is that there's some robots that are playing Mahjong. Is that the name of the game? They're playing Mahjong and you just jump up and just completely fuck up their game. And like the pieces go everywhere and they're all pissed off and then they have to like pick them up and stuff like that. And I love that aspect of it.
And we're talking a lot about the cats, too, but and maybe you have this built in later. I don't know. But the robots and specifically things like that, where those robots weren't really meant to interact with you or anything, like you didn't have to go up to them and talk to them or anything. But when you jump on that table and they like have a human reaction, I thought that was pretty cool. Just the fact that they weren't just robots. They were like, you know, living beings.
Yeah, I like the aspect, too, where most robots you could walk up to and if you meow near them they'll have their face reaction will change and some of them instantly love this cat even though they have no idea what a cat is. They just instantly are like, ah, I love this. There's a little heart that shows up. Some of them are in fear, not like it's like, ooh, like that. You see their little scared face, which I thought was pretty nice too. But I think that more and more I love like small cute and fun ideas in games like this. It's like not necessary. And I could see maybe some curmudgeon playing this game and be like, well, what's the fucking point? What's
right?
I don't need to do that. And it's like, that's no, but that's that is the point, is you don't need to do it. You're just it's you're it adds the emphasis of being a cat. But Ben,
yes,
you mentioned the robots.
Oh, yeah.
And Sean Mason writes in, our boy, and says, hey, Butler boys. Blue 12 Studios did an incredible job with environmental storytelling in this game. Interacting with the universe and observing these robots showed just how human these robots were. While in the slums, Ant Village, and Midtown, there were several optional tasks you could do to reveal more about the world slash robots. Did you do any of these? If so, which stood out to you best, John M? So did you do, well, I guess the answer is yes, because we were talking about your platinum. So you, did you end up doing all of these side quests?
Well, I can't, I'm trying to remember all the side quests. I mean, unless he's talking about the ones that you do need to progress the story, or to, I guess those aren't side quests, but to progress to the platinum. Yeah, I did all those. I'm trying to think of anything else. Basically, anytime I saw a robot, I interacted with it. So if they asked me to do something, I probably did, but I can't remember what was required and what wasn't. But of course, I found all the memories, and some of those include robots. And I found, you know, I went and did like the tasks that they asked you to do. But I am trying to remember specifically what he might be talking about.
So I know that in the slums, there's the side quest with where you have to find all the music for the guy with the guitar. And then in the Ant Village, there's the girl that wants the flowers. Though I didn't do the flower one. And the reason is, we had discussed this a little bit just the other day, is that I did the music one and I felt like it was kind of like underwhelming. Like I was like, what was the point of me doing that? I mean, you get to hear the songs that he plays, which is kind of cool.
Yeah.
But at that point, I think I was more interested in just progressing the story. And I was like, I don't really want to go around and collect these flowers. And the last one showed me it really wasn't worth it unless you're going for the platinum. I don't know. Did you feel like they were, some of them were more expansive to the story? I know the memories are kind of like the main lore building, world building aspects of the game.
Right. Yeah, the memories are definitely worth it. The musical notes or the music pages are, they were cool to like hear the robot play them. But I felt like having, because I went and collected them all before I turned, I think I turned one in and then got the other eight. And before I turned it in, and I was like, I got to stand here and listen to him play eight songs, and like there's no skip button or anything, which again, I respect that because like I hate it. I hate skipping things normally, but I was like, I don't care about listening to him play music. So the flower thing was really simple, though. It was like I got two of them without even meaning to, without even trying to. So I think they were worth it, but I don't know that they're essential. The memories, I think, definitely add a large portion of the story to the game, though.
Yeah, the memories are definitely, I feel like, the, kind of the I don't want to say the majority of the story, but if you didn't pick up at least most of them, then you're going to miss out like a ton on. And I was kind of upset because that's the only game I was like, I did miss a few of them, even though I was looking pretty looking for them. But
yeah,
speaking of the story, I want to go to our Ricky Pontes writes in and says, hey, boys. Glad we're getting a spoiler cast for this game. It definitely deserves one. I just wanted to say I love this game, not even a cat person, but the platforming environments and the little story that never outstayed its welcome. It did scratch an itch, if you catch my drift. Anywho, what did you guys think of the story? It wasn't anything too special, but it had a unique charm to it and also had me thinking about what happened to humanity before what happened. Also, it was a nice platinum, clocked in about maybe 6 to 7 hours. Looking forward to the rest of the spoiler cast. Thanks for all you guys do. So bringing this open just to talk about the story in broad strokes or whatever, I do feel like that is kind of what really unraveling the mystery, I should say, is what was really starting to push me through the game, just because I didn't even realize at first, but I remember initially realizing like, oh, this isn't a city at night, or it's not dark outside. We're in like a contained space and there's like the weird overhead lights. And then figuring out why these robots are here. They have this, some of them it's been so long that they've been down there. They don't even think that there is an outside. They think that this is the world as it is, which is kind of intriguing. And then the last point I'll make before I throw it over to you is just it has a very Near Automata quality where these robots have been alone for so long that all they know how to do at this point is mimic humans and become more human like. And so that's also a really interesting aspect. But I've talked long enough. The story, Ben, what are your thoughts overall?
I will say, I mean, it happens pretty early on in the game, but when you find out that B12 is like a human that put himself into a robot.
Right.
That started adding in a little bit more context because I was like, I wonder how many of these other robots are actually humans but don't realize it. And like it kind of made me have a little bit more of a attachment to some of them, I suppose. And it is interesting because, you know, many of them are acting like humans. They're doing human things. They're, you know, they have a bar and what do robots drink, and they have a nightclub and why do robots need to dance? You know, like stuff like that, where it's like it's a very, it definitely personifies them way more than something like Nier even. I mean, there's lots of robots in Nier that don't have any human qualities. There's plenty that do, of course, too. So it's I felt like that was a good piece, is bringing that personification in and making them more lifelike, I suppose. As far as the overall story, though, I really thought it was charming. I liked the direction they took it as far as, you know, this is why this is meaningful. It's meaningful because you're freeing robots that you've come to like realize have qualities that are positive. And it's also helping potentially save humanity. I don't know if that's actually going to happen or not, because we don't get a lot of context there, but B12 certainly seems to think that it's going to help. So it was endearing. I mean, I think some people would call it emotional. I don't really do that. I don't really get emotional for games, but I found it to be more charming than I thought a cat game would be by far.
Right. I think that one of the coolest things that you reveal piece by piece, it's like, okay, humans were here, they had to go into these bunkers of some kind, but I don't know if it's ever said specifically why. That's the one thing left up to mystery, whether it's like either some, you know, nuclear or there's, you know, global warming, whatever you want to say, something like that. But it is explained throughout it that's like humans got taken out due to a virus, like a plague that went through, took out all the humans. And there's kind of a power dynamic as well. You find out that the people that were in control of the bunker were like watching everyone die.
Yeah.
And they didn't do anything about it, which I thought was kind of interesting, because I'm like, what really are you supposed to do other than open it up? And maybe they didn't know or they weren't able to at the time.
Sure.
So that was cool. And then I guess one thing I want to ask you about is, the name of them is slipping my mind, but the little like the enemy, the one Zerkster, enemy,
something like that.
Zerks.
Something like that. I'll look it up.
Yeah. OK, so they're the one enemy in the game that they can kind of attach onto the cat. And their deal is that they are able to basically eat any kind of matter. I remember there's like some lore in it that originally they could only eat organic matter or trash.
Right.
And then they eventually evolve, since there's no humans around to kind of like contain their evolution, they eventually are able to start eating robots as well.
Yeah.
So, and then the part when you're in the, I think it's in the sewers, and there's the big eyeballs everywhere. That's one of my favorite parts of the game, is like this hive mind creature. So did you pick up the same things as I did as far as the, oh, the Zerks. That's Zerks. What I said. It is Zerg. Zerks. Like it was like Toy Story or something. But no, the Zerks. What do you think about them?
I found them a little underwhelming. I mean, I find the robots' fear of them more interesting than I find them to actually be. And you don't really know where they come from, and you don't really know why they exist. And that's OK. I like mysteries in games, but I just didn't find them that compelling of an enemy, also because they weren't terribly difficult to get away from. Not that this game needed to be difficult. This is very much a chill game, and that's fine. But I didn't really find them all that compelling. I didn't find them as much. Yeah, they just weren't that interesting to me. The Sentinels actually were way more interesting to me, and the robot that betrays you later on down the road, those were much more interesting and provoking to me than the Zerks were. I also, for a second there, thought it was like Yerks or something, and I was like, did they just, that was like the name of the bad guys in Animorphs, but I forget, that's been too long.
That's a deep cut right there, man. Man, I feel like when you said that initially, nothing came to my mind, but then you brought up Animorphs. I'm like, I feel like I do remember that. Yeah. Was there not a live action Animorphs show on TV?
There was. Yeah.
Oh man. Yeah. That has to be horrible. Like awesome. It has to be awesome and horrible.
Yeah. I was a big Animorphs fan, so I'm sure I watched it, but I don't remember it.
Yeah. Anyway, I think it would be good also to talk about, I'm realizing now, I don't think I've included any questions about this, but the game, the way it's kind of divided up is that it has, like, this is the angle of the gameplay, right? Yeah. So there's the section where you have the special beam light that can take out the Zergs or whatever. The Zerks, not Zergs. I did it again. You can take them out. And then there's a section later on where you're kind of like a stealth Metal Gear Solid kitty going through the factory and stuff like that. I found these sections to be mostly pretty good.
Yeah.
I think that in particular, I found the one, there's a section where you need to sneak back into the hotel room, or not the hotel, the apartment rooms.
Yeah.
To get to the one robot that you get the battery in order to get out and stuff like that. I don't know why, but there was one section of that part that really annoyed me where I kind of was, I don't know if I just couldn't find out the right section to go through, but I eventually ended up just kind of like running through it and then hiding. And it worked, but it felt like unsatisfying because I was like, I don't think that's how you're supposed to do that. But how do you feel that they handled the different gameplay angles, we'll say?
Yeah, I'm actually a little confused on why they did that, except maybe just to add a little bit more to the game, because other than going and getting that battery, obviously, like there's not a lot of reason for you to actually go and visit that. And then that, even that light that kills the bugs, even it is only there for like one chapter of the game. So it's not like it was a substantial upgrade to the game. So I felt like that was a little bit hollow. I still liked it. I enjoyed it, but I felt like that was a little bit hollow and just didn't really have a lot of meaningful progression to it. And that's okay. Once again, I didn't expect this game to like wow me in those areas in the gameplay department, but I found them fun. I found it satisfying to pop all the bugs. I didn't have many issues with that part. I know what part you're talking about. The first time I played it and the second time I played it, I could not find the way to get out. So I would agree with there. But yeah, I'm not really sure that they were, again, I guess it goes back to what I said before, like that they weren't that compelling and the way to eliminate them wasn't all that compelling to me. So I don't know. That's probably not a popular opinion, but it didn't leave me thinking about it afterwards, I'll say.
Now's probably a good time to mention some of the trophies of the game. And I know some people wrote in about this, but I kind of wanted to throw this over to you because you went for the platinum for this game and achieved it. And it seems like the two trophies that have kind of been the talking point are the initial trophy where you have to run through the section and not get attacked at all, completely dodge all of them. And then the speedrun trophy where you have to beat the game in under 2 hours, right?
Yeah.
And so how was your experience with the platinum overall and those two specific trophies?
Yeah, so most of the trophies I got just, you know, by playing the game. I think there's a lot of them that are just story related and that's cool. And then there's some of them that are, I guess they're not story related, but they're like required to progress the story. So, and then there are a few others that are like getting all the collectibles and stuff. And I'm somebody who like, when I go into an area, I like go around every corner. Pretty much every game I play, that's kind of how I do it. And it honestly takes me longer to play a lot of games because I do it that way. But my OCD gets to me or something. So the running away from the bugs trophy, I tried it like, I don't know, probably 15 or 20 times when I first started the game. Like, because I did know that was a trophy. I had seen that like an article on Twitter or something. And then I got frustrated and was just like, okay, well, I'm not going to do it right now. I'll just come back to it. I went back after I finished the game and beat it in one run. So I guess it was just a matter of getting used to the movements. And I think there's a little RNG there too. The 2 hour run, I have some actual practical thoughts and I have some philosophical thoughts. The first one is the practical thoughts is I went through the game and my end checkpoint is right before the last cutscene. And I was at like 1 hour, 59 minutes and 13 seconds. And that end cutscene is like must be like 50 seconds long. So I missed it and didn't have a save point. So I had to go back. I went back immediately after I finished it, blazed through it in like an hour and 40 minutes or something. And because I knew I'd never be fresher than I was right there. So it was fine. Right. As far as the actual trophy being in there, I'm wondering if it was like, I know that speedrun trophies are a thing. I know that people like speedruns, but I wonder for a game like this that's so short and $30 isn't a lot of money. I think this is worth $30, but a lot of people would say like, oh, a 2 hour game for $30, is that really worth it? Like you can beat the game. And I think having that trophy in there doesn't really showcase how much of the world there is to explore, because obviously when you're doing that trophy, you're not really exploring a whole lot. And I think it also kind of gives the game a bad look in that people are going to, you know, the people who do equate time to value are going to be like, you know, that's, I don't want to play that game if I can beat it in 2 hours. I don't want to spend $30 on it. And I totally, even though I don't hold that perspective, I understand it because money is important. It's valuable and you got to pick what you spend your money on. So I'm a little confused on that one. Not confused. I know why they did it, but I kind of wish it was like, I don't know. I wish it wasn't there, even though I got it and I was happy to get it. And it's very doable in under 2 hours, but I just, I wonder if it hurts them in the long run.
Right. I mean, initially, anytime someone sees that you can beat a game in 2 hours, it doesn't matter if it's the best game that's ever existed. It's not long enough. So, which Tyler Floyd wrote in a little bit. I'm not going to read his thing, but he asked us how we felt about the game length. And we touched on it a little bit earlier, but yeah. I think that's definitely one of the strongest aspects of this game is that you're never in the same place too long. And right when you feel like you've kind of are like ready to do something new, it pushes you in that direction. Like no problem at all that it paced through. It's not too long. I think my playtime might have been around 5 hours. So it's like, yeah, you can beat it in 2 hours, but that's if you skip everything and pay no attention and use a guide. Like
you're not getting those memories we talked about earlier.
Right.
Exactly. I think that if the game had been like 10 to 15 hours, I would have been bored of it by the end. I think it's exactly the right length to really justify it existing.
So, Ben, I want to talk about the ending of the game. But before that, I wanted to sneak this one here. Sneak this one in here. Josh Kiskult writes in and says, "Good day, gents. There's already a Garfield mod for Stray, and it got me thinking, what cat character would you want most modded into the game? Can be a favorite cat from real life or a cat character. Mine has to be Tom from Tom and Jerry. Thanks and keep a rockin'." And so, yes, there are already some fantastic mods. Of course, someone's already modded CJ from Grand Theft Auto as the cat. I saw the Garfield one, and I remember Ben, your show HP podcast, Brandon brought up like, will there be the ability to like customize your own cat or something like that?
Yeah.
Oh, it was Dave. Okay.
Yeah.
So that ended up not happening, but of course the mod community is happy to step in and provide some excellent mods. So Ben, if you could mod any cat into this game, well, I mean, we had CJ. CJ's not a cat.
CJ's not a cat.
Really, you can do whatever you want. What would you like
to see? That's a good point. Oh, I can't really think. Anything I want off the top of my head is tough. But I think Tom would be a good pick. I also think Felix the cat is an old cartoon. Felix the cat would be kind of baller. Yeah, I think so.
My two are, you could keep the cat basically exactly the same, but put him in the Puss in Boots outfit.
Oh,
with the little hat and the boots, you know, I think that would be very cute. So that would be on the cute side. But if we want to take it to a horrific side, make the cat dog.
Oh, my God.
Just completely mod the dog. The dog never has to say anything the whole time. Oh. But just imagine you running around.
What if the dog
was B12? Whoa. Dang. I'm just imagining when you do like that, when you're running through, imagine you see the dog from Cat Dog, like his head bobbing around and stuff. I mean,
oh man,
The sky's
horrifying.
I know, and that's why I want to see it happen.
Yeah.
I looked on I just quickly Google searched like cartoon cats.
Uh-huh.
Some other ones that might be good are Tony the Tiger. You know, you could give him the nice little ascot.
Yeah.
And there's like the cat from Sailor Moon, and that's boring.
If we're not going cats, could we go, could we make him Pumbaa?
Oh, like an actual little lion. Oh my goodness. Oh no, Pumbaa. No. Pumbaa's the
Pumbaa.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
You might be able to do that.
Pumbaa's the warthog, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's do that.
You planned this idea of changing the cat into a miniature-sized lion, and I think that that also sounds extremely cute. But you got to get that hair physics right.
Cats and lions are, you know, not very far apart from each other, so.
Right.
It works.
Right. But yeah, if you haven't seen the CJ mod,
it's really good.
Make sure to look that up, because that is, it's something. It's definitely something.
Something.
So let's talk about the ending of this game, because when I was perusing the questions, I saw quite a few, and I was surprised that this seems to be kind of a sticking point for people. And so I'm going to read two questions back to back, and then we can kind of take it from there. The first one's from Funky Weed and says, "Hey, Thundercats of Cat's Lair. Love Stray from start to finish, but really, really wanted to see the kitty to reunite with the three other cat companions from the start. That's all my kids kept asking me throughout the entire game." And then Owen wrote in and said, "Hello, are y'all at all disappointed in the end of the game? 10 minutes before the end, it feels like B12 is talking about carrying on humanity, and then he dies. Like, WTF, man. While I enjoyed the game overall, the ending really puts me off." So, two aspects of this. First of all, let's talk about the B12 thing, because I think that Owen missed something here, in that Owen, you know, he's like excited. He's going to carry on humanity, even though there's nobody left. And then he has to sacrifice himself in order to open up the bunker or whatever. But I think Owen missed, and Ben, I'm assuming we're thinking the same thing, is that at the very end, you see that screen turn on, and that Owen is now, like, he's still in there. He's just integrated into the system of the bunker. And so B12 may be able to live on. Did you get that same impression?
I did get that impression, but I also think that even if that wasn't there, I think sacrifice for the greater good is beautiful.
Yes.
Like, even if he is talking about, you know, carrying on humanity, and like the things he's doing, the robot's doing to enable the robots to get out, enable whatever potential comes down the road after the cat goes and sniffs the air, whatever happens after that, like, he's enabling that, and he knowingly sacrifices himself. And I think that's a beautiful thing. And my 6-year-old was watching me play it, and he just started weeping uncontrollably and was crying. And I was like, "What? Are you sad the robot died?" Yeah. And he said, "I'm not sad he died. I'm happy he sacrificed himself."
Mm.
And I was like, "Oh, my son is growing up." Like, I think that's so. I'm not disappointed by the end. I actually think the end is probably the highlight as far as the emotional type stuff you get into there. So no, I don't think it's dissatisfying at all.
Yeah, I think I agree with you in that the sacrifice is an important aspect of it. And that's something I always think with, like, stories and stuff like that, is a story that has no sacrifice in order to achieve the end goal, it's kind of not as satisfying in a lot of ways. And so, and this one, I really feel like B12 does survive in one way or another.
Yeah, I think so
too. Through that screen at the end. So it's like, okay, this is cool that, and I think another thing to add is that, let's say he does die. His reason is saying, like, humans are gone.
Right.
I am all that remains, and I'm a drone robot.
Right.
That was, like, basically programmed to be like a human. Like, the human soul was programmed into me. It's like,
right.
You got the future is what's here now. The robots and the cats or whatever that are surviving. So he was happy to do that. So I think that that's a very interesting point about looking at, like, okay, this is the world now. What's it like moving forward? And I think that the moment too at the ending that really stuck with me is, I love that it showed the different places you've been
yeah,
and showing it opening up and seeing all the robots looking up at the sky and being right. amazed. And it's like finally this freedom right. from this being trapped in this place for so long. And you also see like all of the Zerks, that's it, the Zerks exploding and stuff, like just completely taken out. And so
right.
it's just an entire new world, new opportunity to live for so the robots.
Yeah, you also have to assume that that's the only place they're still existing is where there's not sunlight, I'm assuming.
Yeah, that would make sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they're gone. They're done.
So bringing up what Funky Weed said as well, this is something that I also would have liked to see, is that at the end screen, you see the cat one yeah. last time. And I really expected the other cats to like walk in frame behind the cat. And then it just never happens. And so I'm like, that would have been like a nice circular storytelling moment, that it's like, reunited sure. with the cats from before. But right. it's not it didn't like kill it or anything
right.
for me. I just kind of was like, I don't want him to be alone. I want him to be with his family.
Just imagine he went and found them. You know,
right.
they're strays. They're going to find each other. They're the only Definitely. They're the only humanoid creatures in the world at this point. They're going to find yeah. each other. Not humanoid. That's the wrong word. Sentient, I guess.
Sentient. Right. Yeah. Right. Did you find it weird? I just thought of this because I was thinking about that end part of the game where you're like turning on the computers. I thought that was so funny that it's like, we're going to save everyone here. And the cat needs to turn on the computers by stepping on the keyboards.
Yeah.
Like that was super cute. Did you think it was weird from a story perspective that there are no human remains anywhere?
Well, I didn't. Human remains as far as what goes, like bodies?
So I would imagine that a lot of the humans that died were maybe eaten by the Zerks or something, that they're just.
Sure.
But I was thinking when you're in the control room area, I was like, wouldn't it be, I feel like this is where there would be like some human skeletons or something, where
right.
this area is perfectly preserved. Because no one's been here. Even the robots that are in that area haven't really gained that level of sentience that the ones down below had.
Right.
So I feel like that would have been the area for them, for there to be like any kind of remains or something. But well, I don't know. Maybe that was just me.
I would imagine if there were any human remains, and we don't know, maybe some of the humans, you know, got out and escaped or whatever, especially in that area where, you know, it's still pretty nice and clearly didn't suffer the same thing the slums did. I would imagine that they would have escaped, but also like you have those robot janitors, they probably would have cleaned them up and
that's a good point. All they're doing is cleaning up there.
That's right. Yeah.
So I mean, they probably
yeah.
dump their bodies out. Okay. That makes sense to me then.
The thing I would say would have been kind of like a nice little nod is like maybe like some empty coffee cups or something in the control room. I don't know. I didn't even think about it honestly until you brought it up, but yeah, it kind of would, but I think that also takes the focus off the fact that it's not about the humans at all.
Sure. That makes sense to me. That's just something I was thinking. I was like, there's no.
Yeah.
Like you said, that is the point is that there's evidence that humans once lived here, but there's right. no. Yeah. So yeah. Anyway, Ben, do you have anything that we didn't cover or final thoughts? I feel like it's not a super huge game or extensive game, so I feel yeah. like we kind of touched on all the main aspects of it. Anything?
No, I don't think so. I'm glad we were able to do a show on it, because it's, you know, it's a cute little game. I think it's worth the money. I think it's fun. I didn't get tired of it. It didn't overstay its welcome. And you know, the reality is that if people keep putting out games like this, then I mean, they got to be high quality, but put out a right. $30 game that's 6 to 10 hours long, has, you know, something cute about it and a little bit of challenge too, and I'm probably going to eat those up all day long every day, because I would much rather play that, a couple of those in between some big open world or, you know, other games that I play for months at a time. So yeah, I think it perfectly fits what I wanted at the moment, and I'm done with it. I don't have any desire to really go back to it, but that is good for me because that means like it satisfied its purpose.
Sure, definitely. The one thing, not to open up a whole another can of worms here with this, but I thought of this was kind of an impactful moment for me. And Michael Buffel wrote in about this also. I'm not going to read what he said, but I really liked the scene or the part of the game where you have to go find the robot's dad that is yeah. stuck in the sewers, the scientist, and then mm-hmm. they meet together. And not that I felt like it was overly emotional or that I was like, oh, they're finally reunited or something. But it made me think, because I was telling Holly that I was like, there must be the, okay, I described it in a really weird way, but this will all make sense. I said to Holly, I was like, I was thinking about that there's that level of happiness that is only achieved through pain. Mm-hmm. I was like, think about it like this. If you just go to the bath, if you go pee and you don't have to pee, you don't feel anything. But if you really, really, really have to pee, then it's like, ah, relief. Imagine, and now I'm going to tie this to something crazy here. Imagine you think someone's dead, yeah, and you mourn them and then you move on, but you still have to live with that pain. Right. And so, and then imagine the happiness you would feel if they end up not being dead and they're actually right, alive. And so I always think that's kind of an interesting story element. Not that it's even that big of a part of this game, but I don't know, made me think of that.
Sure. Yeah, I think so. I definitely think that it was a nice piece of it, but the only thing that my problem is I was thinking too logically about it. I'm like, well, how does this robot have a father? Like, that didn't make any sense to me. But I agree, it was a nice part. Even if they were just friends, it would have been a nice part that they were reunited. I was also thinking about the fact that they weren't very far apart, really, when you think about how far the cat went.
Yeah.
Like, they were, it was just like, there's just a wall separating you, basically. Like, you could have easily seen each other. But no, I don't want to take anything away from it. It was heartfelt, but it didn't tug on anything, for sure.
Sure. Well, that's it for our Stray spoiler cast. Like we said, it's out on PlayStation 5 and PC currently, though. Stay away from the PC version, I'm hearing, for now, because it's apparently got a lot of stuttering issues, and it's very fantastic on PlayStation 5.
Yeah, did you have any issues on PS5 at all?
I had maybe a few points, very sparingly, where I saw the frame rate dip.
Yeah.
But nothing that made me annoyed.
I was going to say, I saw one frame rate dip, and it was in the same spot all the times I played through it. And then there was, I don't know if this is a feature or a bug, but there was one part where I was like running and I kind of looked away or something for a second and I ran into a wall and the cat just kept running like full speed, just face first into the wall. So that was my fault. But I don't know if that's a bug or if they should have just like stopped and sat or something. But either way, it performed great otherwise. Yeah.
Yeah. Overall, very solid in that area. So, Ben, thank you for joining me.
Thanks for having me.
This has been fun. A nice little quick in and out 53 minutes of Sacred Symbols Plus for you. So thank you again, everybody, for listening, whether it's on YouTube for free later or on Patreon right now. We appreciate you so much. Make sure to check us out at patreon.com/laststandmedia if you're listening later. And of course, more Sacred Symbols Plus coming your way very soon. But until then, we'll see you later. Goodbye.
Sacred Symbols, a PlayStation podcast, is a product and trademark of Last Stand Media and Collins Last Stand LLC, and is proudly recorded in the USA. The show is conceived by, is written by, and is directed by me, Colin Moriarty. My co-hosts are Chris Raygun Maldonado and Dustin Furman. The show is produced by executive producer Dustin Furman. It's edited by associate producer Ben Smith. All of Last Stand's theme music is by my best friend, Ramon Narvaez. As you know, all of Last Stand's shows, including Sacred Symbols, are fan-funded on Patreon at patreon.com/laststandmedia. The following names are at the producer level on Patreon, our highest tier, and we're grateful for your thoughtful and kind contributions to our independent endeavor. Thank you. Steven Nieder, Ross Marenka, Miguel A. Brewer, Morgan Ashley, Azan, Michael Vecchio, Jerome Ferreira, SLVFMA, Daniel D'Amore, Brad Cooley, Jeremy Key, Patrick Leslie, Malachi Wall, Dave Cowell, Donald John Vader, Stephen Innerfield, Andrew Roman, Lord Starscream, Jacob Donovan, Eduardo Perez, Salty Trees, My Name is Fucking Mayo, Logan Byford, GJ, Eddie Medina, Jason R. Zahn, Christopher Nogg, Zeno Adam, Grayson Maxwell, Cody Woodall, Blake Nesbitt, Nuclear Prostate, Sorta Serious Gaming, Colin Farley, Mark Arnold, Zia Parix, Henry Groth, Relentless Rex, Tristan Palacios, Drew Mullen, Renegar Graham, Christian R., Jad Rita, Patrick Skipper, Brian Hernandez Espinoza, Chris Kelly, Remington Wilson, Dustin Graff, Peyton Stone, Jalapeno, Josh Howland Rui, Quentin Thedens, Michael Buffel, Dan Root, Asak Paredes, Talisman, Christopher Morgan, Andreas Wessling, Randall Halsey, Robbie Nauman, William Holbert, Josh Godfrey, Kalike Souza, Vornak, Daniel Johnson, H. Tronj, Trey W., Antonio C., Jay Getter, Assassinated Devil, Bjorn Campbell, Jeff Mercado, Gregory Slavinsky, Jordan Gale, Of Fortuna, John Zile, Boots, Tyler Brown, Megadeth, Gavin Newland, Alex Lapierre, Saul Balcazar, Brian White, Raul Melendez, Eric Harden, Matt Flowers, Kinnams, Joseph Baker, Rodney Coleman, Chris Moore, Caswell, Antti Kinnunen, Chris, Dave Alvarez, Will Hernandez, Chris Galvin, Justin Gonzalez, Mason Kotelak, Ollie Fritz, Zach Allum, Kyle Hagel, Colin Love, Daryl E. Naiman, Ryan R. Kittredge, Toby Ryland, Michael S., David Bostic, Stewie108, Patrick Montgomery, Simon Dunbar, D.B. Cooper, Fat Houdini, Richter86, Barrett Boswell, Christopher DeVio, Chris Morton, Johnny Waffles, Roto24, Jonathan Coach, Sean Mason, Josh Gravelick, Jordan Town, Brian Chan, Organic Produce, Carlos Algarit, Dominic, Mike Menzel, Richard Hebert III, Miranda Grubba, Josh Yeager, Gavin, Joey Andrzejczyk, Nathan R., Joe McPartland, Gary Cavallo, Christopher Moore, Jacob Bell, Dennis Usel, Lou and Ray Loper, Jonathan Cortez, Dylan Burns, Betty Ann Moriarty, John Schultz, David Chestnut, Tom Quinn, Spencer F., Anton K., Alan Trembley, Tyler Bello, Ryan T. Mandel, Tony Zuniga, Robbie Hensley, Shane Miller, Alex Cabrera, Lennon Brixey, Hugo's Desk, Peter Reynolds, Anthony Vasquez, Adam Kinniston, The Rose Experience and Grizzled Veteran Media, Tyler Goodwin, William O'Carroll, Max Cannon, Phil Crone, Throw 7, Adam Nix, Josh McKinney, Michael Gates, Alex Gates, Ryan Robertson, Sean Chandler, Lockmort, Gio Corsi, Joey Gondholiker, Gerald Pennington, Justin Payne, Justin Wagaman, David Iacolucci, Paul Joyce, Chad Lewis, Enrique Perez, Joshua Smallwood, Spencer Brand, Don Lee, John Cordero, Keith A. Lewis, Ashley Carlson, Marius Garson Peterson, Ryan Greenwood, Tyler Harris, Matthew Perdue, Patrick Carper, Mad Mock Media, and Jonathan Rice.